chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 8.
Yodhyatmiko yam purushaha.
So sav eva ridhai vikaha.
Yastatro bhaya vichchedha.
One who. Now it's there. Adhyatmikaha is possessed of the sense organs. Ayam. This. Purushaha. Personality. Saha, he, aso, that, eva, also, aridaivikaha, controlling deity, yaha, that which, tatra, there, ubhaya, of both, vichchedaha, separation. Purushaha. Person. He. Four. Adibhautikaha. The visible body. Or the embodied living entity. Translation. The individual person possessing different instruments of senses is called the adhyatmik person. And the individual controlling deity of the senses is called adidaivik. The embodiment seen on the eyeballs is called the adibhautik person. Purport. The supreme controlling summum bonum is the personality of Godhead in his plenary portion of Paramatma, or the Supersoul manifestation. In Bhagavad Gita 10.42, it is said, Ata bahu naitena kim gyatena tarvajuna yushtabhyaham miram kritsnam ekam sena stito jagat. All the controlling deities like Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva are different manifestations of the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who exhibits himself in such manners by entering into each and every universe generated from him. But still, apparently, there are divisions of the controller and the controlled. For example, in the food controlling department, the controller of food is a person, made of the same ingredients as the person who is controlled. Similarly, each and every individual in the material world is controlled by the higher demigods. For example, we have our senses, but the senses are controlled by superior controlling deities. We cannot see without light, and the supreme controller of light is the sun. The sun god is in the sun planet, and we, the individual human beings, or any other being on this earth, are all controlled by the sun god, as far as our eyes are concerned. Similarly, all the senses we have are controlled by superior demigods, who are also as much living entities as we are, but one is empowered while the other is controlled. The controlled living entity is called the adhyatmik person, and the controller is called adidaivik person. All these positions in the material world are due to different fruitive activities. Any individual being can become the sun god, or even Brahma, or any other god in the upper planetary system by a higher grade of pious work. And similarly, one becomes controlled by the higher demigods by lower grades of fruitive activities. So every individual living entity is subject to the supreme control of the Paramatma, who puts everyone in different positions of the controller and the controlled. That which distinguishes the controller and the controlled, that is, the material body, is called Adibhautik Purusha. The body is sometimes called Purusha, as confirmed in the Vedas, in the following hymn. Sa va esha purusho na rasa maya. This body is called anarasa, embodiment. This body depends on food. The living entity which is embodied does not eat anything, however, because the owner is spirit in essence. The material body requires replacement of matter for the wearing and tearing of the mechanical body. Therefore, the distinction between the individual living entity and the controlling planetary deities is in the anarasamaya body. The sun may have a gigantic body and the man may have a smaller body, but all these visible bodies are made of matter. Nonetheless, the sun god and the individual person, who are related as the controller and the controlled, are the same spiritual parts and parcels of the Supreme Being. And it is the Supreme Being who places different parts and parcels in different positions. And thus the conclusion is that the Supreme Person is the shelter of all. Om Ajnana Dimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kathamayam Dadati Svaporantikam Namasreshtam Anumapi Satchiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Rupadim Maturim Goshtavrikim Radha Kunda Girivaram Horadika Madhavasam Praptavya Sapatita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Yo Yatmiko Yam Purushaha Sosa Vevadika Daivikaha Yastatro Baya Vichchetha Purusho Yaribhautikaha. The individual person possessing different instruments or senses is called Adhyatmik person, and the individual controlling deity of the senses is called Adidaivik. The embodiment seen on the eyeballs is called the Adibhautik person. I had to read this purport quite a few times to work out what it was saying. So don't be surprised if you didn't understand what was happening in this purport. Because it's quite a... In one sense it's complex. But the essence of it is simple. As is the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a complex text. It's complex literature. But the essence of it is simple. And the complexity here perhaps lies in the sense that we are very used to hearing these terms, Adhyatmik, Adibhautik, and Adidaivik, as kleshas, as miseries. And therefore, that's our frame of reference we have for, okay, we can easily say, what is an Adhyatmik misery? An Adhyatmik misery is a misery that's caused by the mind or caused by the self. An Adibhautik is a misery caused by another living entity, another brahmachari or brahmacharini or another whatever, another mosquito or another fly. That's an Adibhautik klesha. An Adidaivik klesha is a misery caused or a disturbance caused by an earthquake or a hurricane or a tornado or freezing cold weather or something. There, Adi. Daivika kleshas. So that's our general frame of reference for these three terms. But here the terms are presented in slightly different way, in a slightly different context. But something that strikes me here in this presentation is a word that goes with it. Usually we have the klesha word with it. Mm-hmm. Now here Prabhupada's put the word person with it. And because the word person is connected with the Adhyatmik, as Adhyatmik person, the Adibhautik person, and we think it sort of throws us a little off. First we're dealing with kleshas, miseries, and then we're dealing with persons. Are persons miseries also? Persons are kleshas? No, they're not kleshas. But the idea here is that there's the controller and the controlled. And Prabhupada's making the point, and the Bhagavatam is making the point here, that they're all part and parcel of Krishna, all part and parcel of a supreme Purusha Uttama, the Purusha Uttama, the supreme person in the cosmic creation is Krishna. And that all of the other living entities from Lord Brahma, this Prabhupada makes this point very clearly in the purport to 1042, the verse that was quoted here, Atava Bahunaitena, that from Lord Brahma down to the insignificant ant, all of these living entities depend upon Krishna. That is really the purport, that all living entities, that without Krishna entering as the Paramatma, as a super soul, into all of the living entities in the universe, have no capacity to act independently. We can't act independently, we're completely dependent on that Paramatma, we're completely dependent on Krishna. And in the process of practicing devotional service, we become more and more aware, more and more conscious of our dependency on Krishna. And that's a good dependency. We have a tendency in conditioned life, particularly in the modern world, to claim our independence. I'm independent. I don't need any support. I was traveling in India with my niece. My niece came to visit us a few months ago. And she came to visit us in Mumbai, and we took her to Vrindavan. And we showed her, she's a very contemporary young girl. And she just graduated from a music college here in Melbourne. And she's got all tattoos on her neck and on her arms, on her ankles, and she's got all rings on her ears, and she's got short cut hair, and she's pretty cool. So she came to visit us in our very conservative apartment in Mumbai, and everyone's looking at her. This girl, first day she walked in with a pair of shorts, and you know, a singlet and a pair of shorts, and all these South Indian ladies are looking at her. Where did she come from? And then we took her quickly, we whipped her off to Vrindavan, and we got on a train. And we were paying for her, because she's a niece, you know, so we're happy to have her and to host her and to fill her up with prasadam and take her to all the temples and look after her like a family member. And but she's very got an independent streak, you know. She's very much into women power and everything like this. That women are equal in all respects. So she didn't like that when we paid for her in the restaurant or anything like that. She wanted to pay her own way, or she wanted to pay for us, but she didn't want to feel dependent on us all the time. And after a few weeks she kind of worked out that it's just a natural exchange. She's my twin brother's daughter. It's just a natural exchange for to be in that position. But she wanted to keep asserting her right as a woman to not depend on uncle or not depend on anybody. But one thing happened to her in Vrindavan. She became we took her down the side tracks, the side streets down to the market and things like this. And we walked through villages. We went to some remote villages. We took her to this village where I hadn't been before. It's near Radhakund. It's just before you get to Radhakund. A friend of mine has a peacock sanctuary there. You can go and visit his peacock sanctuary. Because in Vrindavan they're building a lot of buildings now. Everywhere they're building. And so the peacocks used to have trees. Now there's buildings there. And the peacocks need big trees because they're big animals. They're big birds. They need big, big trees. You see them fly up to the top of the trees at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, right, ready to crash out for the night. So they need big trees, big branches, big protection. So they're all leaving Vrindavan now. The peacocks are going from Vrindavan town. There's too many buildings there. And they're going out to Radhakund, and now they're going further out into the villages. So he's feeling very compassionate. He's a Manipuri. He feels very sad for the peacocks that we took over their places. You know, we cut down their trees, took their homes. So he made a sanctuary for peacocks, and he's researching peacocks. He spends most of his days Googling peacocks and trying to work out how to attract peacocks to his house. And he's doing a good job. He has like peacock beds, and they come and sleep in his bed on top of the roof. He made these special beds for them. And of course they come for food. So he worked out what food they like, and he put the food everywhere. And the peacocks come for food. And slowly they're nesting there. When they start to reproduce there, he'll have a nice peacock home. Anyway, it's a very nice ashram, and you can stay there pretty much for... It's like a dharmashala. You can stay there for donation. It's supported by the Swedish Yatra, I think. It's nicely made. It has a fireplace. Never seen a fireplace in a house in Vrindavan. Like in the West, you have a fireplace and chop wood and put it in. So I have a fireplace in winter. It's very nice. Burn a fire. His name's Nila Madhava Puro. Nila Madhava. Anyway, so the peacocks, we took her to this place, and there is a place where it's a very, right around his grandmother's village. Have you been there? What's the name of that place? I had never been there. Many daughters have been there before with Dina Bandhu and different people. Anyway, there was a very beautiful place and very peaceful and tranquil. And then we went to some little temples there around the Kund. And she started playing cricket with the local people. The local bridge buses allow cricket too much. So she's a cricket player. And they were surprised. You know, first of all, I was surprised that she was a girl. They worked out she was a girl. And then they were surprised. Then they were surprised that she could play cricket. And then she was bowling them out, and she was beating them in cricket. And so the village, everyone from the village was coming out. You know, like first there was 3 or 4 people, then 10 people, then the whole village was looking at this white girl playing cricket in the Radhakund. But she became, slowly she got the idea that she fell in love with the bridge buses. And she said, Radhe, Radhe, all day. She would wake up and say, Radhe, Radhe. And she would go to Prasadam, Radhe, Radhe, and like, in Vrindavan, everyone says Radhe Radhe, but she said like 10 times more than anyone else. And like everyone's going, okay, Radhe Radhe. You know? Chill out on the Radhe Radhe. But she was really into it. And then we're going back to Mumbai, and she said, in Mumbai, will people respond if I say Radhe Radhe? And we said, oh, you can try. Depends who you meet. But not generally not. It's a Vrindavan specialty. Because in Vrindavan, everybody understands that connection with Krishna, Radha and Krishna, that we have to be connected, that Krishna is the supreme Purushottama, that he's the supreme Shota, Ashraya, Ashraya Vigraha. One time at Radhakund, we went for this this bathing at Radhakund on the appearance day of Radhakund. The devotees go out from Vrindavan temple in buses with different devotees, Dinabandhu Prabhu. And we went out there, it's a 12 o'clock midnight bath in the Kund, and it's packed, and you have to wrestle with all the 80-year-old, 90-year-old Bengali Matajis, you know, they push you out of the way, and they beat you. You don't want to get in their way for this snan. And so we went there one night, and on the way back, of course, we lost our bus for sure. There was thousands of people there, buses everywhere, and it's complete chaos. And the bus parked in one place, but then he got kicked out of that place, so he had to park somewhere else, and then no one could find his bus. So we all got back to Vrindavan somehow. But on the way back, there was this... On the way in, we noticed this light pole was like flashing a bit. There's some flash, electricity on the top. Just flash, flash, just some little sparks. And then on the way back, this is like we were there for 4 or 5 hours, did parakrama and different things like this. And then on the way back to find the bus, same light pole we saw, it was like flames were coming out of this lamp pole, like a flamethrower. And it was on fire, this lamp pole was on fire. and all these old bridge buses underneath it, three or four of them, men, and they're looking up at it. Just like, wow, you know, they're looking up. They're right there, right there. I just think it was like exploding with fires, fireworks. And I was thinking how entertaining it was. Lamp posters going to explode. But for them, it's just part of the routine, whatever. It's not, you know, it's unusual, but it's part of Krishna's energy. So they're thinking how amazing Krishna is. He's making his fire show from this lamp pole in the middle of the night, just for the pleasure of Radharani, for Radhakund. For the appearance of Radhakund, he put a special light show on. They're thinking like this. That Krishna is the supreme. In the Bhagavatam, it said that in the first shloka of the Bhagavatam, it places Krishna in his position, in the position where he's situated today in this purport, that we are dependent and he's independent. We're always dependent. At every stage of our existence, we're dependent. And at every stage of Krishna's appearance and manifestation and activities, lila, he's independent. That's the difference between the part and parcels, the jivas, and Krishna, is that he is svarata. He's abhigya svarata. Tene brahma hridaya adiya. He's the completely all-cognizant. He knows everything, and he's fully independent. He doesn't depend on anyone or anything at any time to perform his activities. In the purport to the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it's a long purport, but it's a purport that needs reading and rereading and relishing and re-relishing, because Prabhupada, he presented this philosophy in 1962, he published this book, before he came to America, before he came to the West. He published Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. And it has a deep meditation, deep realization, and an indication. It said the whole philosophy is contained in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything in the first canto. Practically everything is in the first two chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first two chapters, the introduction to Bhagavatam, is full of the philosophy, complete. Prabhupada presents the philosophy in many from many perspectives in a very comprehensive and coherent way, so that at least if the first canto is read, we can get a good understanding. We have a very solid framework from which to develop our identity and our understanding of who we are, what the universe is, who Krishna is, how this time factor is working, and about karma or activities. So in that purport, Srila Prabhupada says the part and parcels are always dependent, the part and parcels of Krishna. Just like they're qualitatively the same. And this is a very important point that Prabhupada makes on many occasions, that the jiva, the part and parcel jiva, who are controlled, they have qualities of Krishna. So we have that tendency to want to be independent. We have that tendency to want to be all-knowing. It's a quality that's in Krishna. So whatever quality Krishna has, we have, but we have it minutely. And Prabhupada gives the analogy of the gold mine and the gold bracelet. They're qualitatively the same. And he gives many different analogies about the drop of water in the ocean. It's qualitatively the same, chemically the same, but quantitatively vastly different. It said that, here it says in this purport, that the sun god depends on Krishna. He's got a very large body, he's got a tremendous capacity, and far superior to the jiva here, who's catching a tram down to Collins Street. The sun god is far, far greater than that jiva. But their quality, they're the same. They're controlled. The sun god is a very advanced personality. But in Brahma Samhita, it said that the sun god, even though he's so advanced, he's taking his direction and inspiration from Krishna, on cowherd boy. That's Chakshudir, Esha, Savitar. That this sun god is completely dependent on Krishna. And the more we develop and the more we realize, the more we practice devotional service, the more we realize our connection with Krishna and our dependence on Krishna for everything. And then for the demigods too. Because it said that we can't even close our eyelid without the cooperation of a superior forces. As a demigod for the eyelid, a demigod for the tongue, a demigod for the breath, a demigod for hearing, a demigod for touch, a demigod. There's many, many demigods involved, great personalities in this kind of cosmic ecosystem. We're very fond of talking about eco-friendly buildings and eco-friendly farms and eco-friendly lettuce, whatever. But there's a cosmic ecology. And in that cosmic ecology, the demigods and all the living entities are dependent on each other. We just came from a school in Gujarat. And there it was very, very hot, like 47 degrees temperature every day. And that was like in the shade practically. When you go out in the sun, there's another thing. Where the farmers are in the field, that was more than 47 for sure. So we were in this property and they had no electricity. So there was no fan. There was no AC, what to speak of fan. I was thinking, where's the AC room here? But then I found out there's no fan. Okay. When's the next bus back to Mumbai? So we stayed there for a few days. They had Bhagavatam class at 1:30 in the day. It was like the peak of the heat. 1 o'clock in the day, it was scorching. And Srimad Omnamo Bhagavate Vasudeva. And nobody slept through that. Amazing. See, the adults couldn't go in the morning Bhagavatam class. They have a very good community. It's all it's centered around a school. And the adults in the morning, they're cooking and cleaning and waking up their kids and doing so many things, they can't go to Bhagavatam class. So they decided to have Bhagavatam class at 1 o'clock when all the duties are finished. All the cooking's done, all the cleaning's done, all the kids are sorted out. And then at 1 o'clock they all come together and have Bhagavatam class. It's quite impressive. They didn't just give it up because they're too busy. They made a time. They thought about it and made a time in the day. Even it's the hottest time of the day. They made a time to have Bhagavatam. And it can go for 1 or 2 hours. There's no restrictions there. No one to stop you. No. Prashad and that. And they have nice prashad. But there was a big rat came in. I lost my tilak bar, and I said to the devotee, I said, son, I think one of the kids took my tilak. These are all kids. You know, so of course one of the kids must have taken my tilak. That was my conclusion. And I said, can you find out the tilak? I said, oh, they came in with a big block of tilak. And I said, that's not my tilak. Oh, my tilak. Big block of tilak. And they said, no, the kids wouldn't take it. A rat took it. I said, come on, a rat took it. It was a big piece of tilak. How would a rat take it? What would a rat want with my tilak? You know? So then I didn't believe them. Then the next morning I came in back into the room because we were sleeping outside. It was so hot. Everybody sleeps outside. So I came into the room in the morning time and this rat, like the size of a possum. We had these possums here in Melbourne. Like that size rat. Jumped out of the cupboard. And I was like, oh my God, Hare Krishna! What was that thing? There were possums in Gujarat. And then I asked the devotee, I said, this really big thing jumped out of the cupboard at me. And he said, see, that's a rat, he took your tilak. Then I believe he took the tilak. Actually, the first few mornings I saw my pot, water pot was always tipped over. And again, I was thinking, these kids are spaced out. They're tipping over my water pot. But actually, it was the rat, because I saw where he runs. He was tipping over the water pot. And there's a good chance he took my tilak. But anyway, there the devotees were telling me that when they first got there was a lot of snakes. Big snakes, right? I was feeling like, this is snake territory. That's what I was feeling. I went for a walk in the morning to chant japa, and I didn't go very far, I came back. I was thinking, I think this is snake area, right? So then I was right. The devotee said, when they first came, there were snakes everywhere. It's their place, the snakes were there first. And so the devotees put up these fences. This is why I asked, what are all these green fences, these funny fences everywhere? And they said it stops the snakes. They realize someone's there. They're kind of, snakes don't climb. So when they get to the bottom of the fence, they can go a little bit, but they can't climb, like straight up, like monkeys in Vrindavan. They're vertically, they can't go. So then they said that the snakes are fine. You know, the snakes eat the rats. So they only kill the cobras. They got big cobras there. They have a snake scissors, like these big, huge clamp things. And if a snake's in the yard, they go and grab the snake by the neck. And it crushes the neck. It's like a garden tool. You know, like you have a garden tool here. So they take the snakes out. And they try not to, they throw them. If it's not a cobra, there's cobras there, like big cobra. And then they slice them off. But the snakes are good because they keep the rat population down.
Poison
snakes. But they eat all the rats. And if you don't have snakes, if you get rid of all the snakes, the rats will take over. So in that ecology, we need the snakes. And then you see mongoose. Mongooses are there. They're pretty cool looking creatures, right? They're eating the snakes. So there's a nice system there, natural system there, of an ecology where one living entity, jivo, jivasya, jivanam, is food for the other living entities, keeping things in balance. There's a cosmic balance there. So Krishna has the same thing. Sometimes we're born in the body of a snake, sometimes we're born in the body of a fish or a crocodile, or sometimes we're born in the body of a human being. In the Bhagavatam it says, kvachit pumsa, kvachit chasri. Sometimes we come as a man, sometimes we come as a woman. Kvachit no bhayam andadi. Sometimes we come in between, a eunuch, and not a man or a woman. And sometimes we come into this world as a deva, and sometimes as a human being species, sometimes as a beast, sometimes as a bird. And this is all dependent on karma, on our activities, what activity we performed. And that's what Prabhupada's saying here in this purport. The controller and the controlled is depending on karma. See, Lord Indra has a good karma. He did a lot of punya, so he got a high position. And then the street cleaner or someone else in human form of life, 400,000 species of life in human beings who are on lower, who are more controlled, have a different karma. But it's all based on karma. What is it? Yata gunan kama bhava. It's born, these different bodies are born from activities, from the karma that we do. And therefore, sometimes we're controllers and sometimes we're controlled by the material energy. And the 10 offenses in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it said that the demigods are great personalities, but we shouldn't consider them to be equal to Krishna, to Lord Vishnu. They're not the same. They're not on the same platform. They're very exalted for us, but they're also in this cosmic ecology, in this cosmic cycle of manifestation, they're just exalted parts and parcels of God. They're not God. But we have a tendency to confuse them as God. And therefore, it's a second offense, is don't think that they're independent of God, because they're not. Nobody's independent of God. Everybody's dependent. The demigods and the demons have a constant battle for supremacy. Who will be the controller? Who will be the supreme controller over all the living entities? If you visit this very famous temple in Angkor Wat, in Cambodia, they have discovered there, even recently they discovered another temple there, a beautiful temple, huge temples. Of course there's no life in terms of bhakti or devotion, but they're all Vishnu temples, and they're built according to Vastu. So if you go to Sri Rangam in South India, you see a very beautiful temple of archways and Vastu, completely Vastu temple built temple. So in Southeast Asia, the Vedic culture spread in the same way. Vastu and Vishnu worship and many of these things are there throughout Southeast Asia. So in Cambodia, we visited this Angkor Wat. Now there's some devotees there living, not in Angkor Wat, but close by. So you can have prasadam there. But we went there, and one of the things, one interesting thing that grabbed our attention there, there was many beautiful deities carved into the sides of the buildings, bas reliefs. Lord Nrisimhadeva was there, Lord Vamanadeva, or Dasavatara, beautifully carved. And it's a very ancient temple. And they had a huge leela of the churning of the milk ocean. That was like the masterpiece there. And it was like for 1 kilometer journey of the ocean. And it was carved into the wall of the main temple in Angkor Wat. And they're repairing it. The French government there have got a number of NGOs working there to repair this site. Archaeologists, they're repairing this site to a very beautiful, visually very beautiful and breathtaking manifestation of Krishna's energy. And that place was a Vishnu temple, for sure. Now, the Buddhist, there was different empires that took over, and the Buddhists, they put a little Buddha in there. But there's no practical worship going on there. But it's a very amazing thing. And they have all these people that go around, and they tell people about the pastimes of the inscriptions and the motifs and all of the carvings. And they tell in French, and they tell in German, and they tell in Chinese, and they tell in Mandarin, and they tell in Russian languages. And they tell in every language, Japanese. They're like tour guides. But they're tour guides telling Leela. Right? So these tour guides, they don't know, but they're telling about Mahabharata pastimes. They're telling about Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. They're telling about Nrisimhadeva ripping open Hiranyakashipu. They're telling about Prahlad Maharaj. That's their job. And they're telling it. They can learn it in 5 or 6 languages. Cambodians. They can learn it in so many languages. Their job is Krishna Katha. They're tour guides that tell Krishna Katha. So they get a lot of benefit and a lot of American dollars from telling this leela. But it's getting some benefits coming for sure. But the churning is a big one, and they tell the churning how the demigods and the demons are churning this ocean of milk. And they tell this whole story and all different personalities that come out of the ocean. Sometimes the demigods are victorious in their battles and their endeavors, and sometimes the demons. One time the demigods beat the demons, they defeated the demons. The devas were victorious. And they were feeling, in the Keno Upanishad, they're saying that the demigods were feeling a little bit proud of their position, thinking, yeah, you know, we beat them. And so Krishna appeared there with Lord Shiva and Parvati. And they saw the condition of the demigods. And so we need to show these demigods who's the controller. Because they're thinking that by their strength, they defeated demigods, the demons. So Krishna manifests a very effulgent form. And then the demigods saw this form from a distance. And they thought, wow, who is that? We didn't see anything like that before. So they said, why don't they deputed Agni to go and find out who that personality is over there on that other side of the mountain. So Agni went over there, Indra and all the demigods, they told, go and see who it is and come back and tell us. So Agni's being deputed to go and find out, and he goes to find out. And before he can ask, you know, like, who are you? Then that personality says, who are you? And Agni says, come on, everybody knows who I am. I'm Agni. You know, and he says, what's so special about Agni? What can Agni do? And Agni said, I can burn forests and, you know, I can burn anything to ashes. I've got so much power. And so he picked up a blade of grass and he said, all right, do your power on this grass. Burn the grass. And he's saying, don't insult me, you know. You're asking me to burn the grass, I can burn the forests. And he said, burn. So Agni invoked his Shakti, all of his Agni Shakti, and he tried to extinguish this blade of grass and couldn't touch it. Nothing happened. And then he's looking at this man, this effulgent personality, and looking at the grass, and he said, okay,
I better go back. So he went back and he told Indra and the demigods. They said, well, who is he? Who's that personality over there? Because he's still shining effulgent. He said, don't know. I couldn't work out. And he said, what happened? He said, well, he asked me to burn the grass and I couldn't burn the grass. So I don't know who he is. So they said, oh, I think Vayu should go there. Because Vayu can blow anything away and he can practically blow holes through mountains. So they sent Vayu there. And Vayu got there, and before he could ask this personality, said, who are you? And Vayu said, I'm Vayu. Everybody knows who Vayu. Everybody depends on Vayu, on air. I'm the Lord of air. And as if you didn't know. And he said, what's so strong, what's so good about air? What's your potency? What's your shine? He said, I can blow anything. And he said, blow the grass. He put the grass there. And Vayu was also insulted. But then he blew. He tried to blow the grass. But the grass was completely steady. Didn't waver anything. So he said, okay, I can't work out who this person is. And he went back. So I said, all right, Indra, you have to go. There's only one person left. Vayu, Agni, Indra has to go. Because Indra is the most powerful demigod. And anybody will have to respond to Indra, Lord Indra. So Indra went there. And then when Indra just got there to ask who he was, that personality disappeared. And Indra was there. And then Parvati, Lord Shiva's wife, she appeared there. And then this Indra, he knows who she is. So he asked her, who is this person that Indra came, that Agni came here, that Vayu came here, that I came here? We can't figure out who this person is. And then she explained that this person is the supreme controller, where demigods are controllers, but this is a supreme controller. And he's got the supreme potency and the supreme shakti, and we derive our shakti from him. That's where we get our energy from, that's where we get our potency from, that's where we get our understanding from. And so Indra went back and he explained that that was the boss. That was the supreme, Purushottama. And he's the supreme controller, and we are deriving our energy from him. And that's really what this verse today is talking about. The controller and the controlled. The superior deities. And we can, Prabhupada says in the purport, you can become sun god if you want to become a sun god. You can become a Lord Brahma if you want to become Lord Brahma. You can do this. But still we're controlled. At any stage of our material existence we're controlled, and we have to learn to take shelter, ashraya of Krishna. Just to conclude, in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, it's said that there is not Lord Shiva, not Lord Brahma, nimim vidincho na bhavo, nasri apyupya sangama, not the goddess of fortune who resides on the chest of Lakshmi, who resides on the chest of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu, not these great personalities have received the same mercy, prasadam, lebade, gopi, as this gopi mother Yashoda. And there in the purport, in the commentary, Srila Prabhupada says that these great demigods, these great personalities, and Lakshmi herself, they don't have the same access to Krishna. They don't have the same access to the supreme controller. They're great personalities, but even like the munis and the great sages and rishis, they can go on for millions and millions of years reciting verses and shlokas and understanding and performing yogic pranayama and so many things, but they will never achieve the tip of the lotus feet of Krishna unless they satisfy him. And because Mother Yashoda had satisfied Parishrama, she had worked hard to satisfy Krishna. Drishtva Parishramam Krishna. When Krishna saw her hard work, then Kripayasit, he gave mercy to her. Swabandhane. And the mercy was that she could bind him. Mother Yashoda was finally able to capture Krishna because of her bhakti, because of her affection, because of her love for her son. That's how she captured Krishna. And while we say that Krishna is not controlled by any demigod, he's a supreme controller, he is controlled by his devotees. That's one of the characteristics of pure bhakti.
is that Krishna is the supreme, independent, svarat abhigya, all-knowing, but he becomes controlled by his devotees, by the loving sentiments of his devotees. Otherwise, he's not controlled by anyone. Any questions or comments? Do we take any credit, you mean, for what we're doing? We do take the credit that the jiva can take, the conditioned soul, is that we recognize the source. When we recognize the source of our skill, the source of our endeavor, the source of our understanding, that's the credit that we can take, is that Krishna gave us the ability to see that we are instrumental. We're instruments. And that's a good prayer to offer to the Lord, that let me become an instrument in your service. Not let me become the big controller of it. Let me become an instrument. And as an instrument, we become empowered as instruments. But as independent controllers, as independent doers, we're limited, because there's other independent doers who are also competing for similar positions, for similar recognition, for similar understanding. And so because of that competition, we'll become frustrated, we'll become envious, we'll become angry, we'll become mad, because we're thinking that we are the doer. It's not that we don't do anything, we do lots, we do more. When you understand Krishna is the doer, the supreme doer, the supreme controller, then we do much more than we could ever achieve when we thought that we were the doer, that we thought that it's because of my intelligence, because of my skill, it's because of my expertise that this is happening. But thank you, Krishna, for giving me this understanding. Thank you, Krishna, for putting me in this position. So gratitude comes. And through that acknowledgement, gratitude comes, and from gratitude, we understand our consciousness is realigned or readjusted with the Supreme Consciousness as the subordinate. We don't want to be subordinate. We don't want to be servant. In the Sanskrit dictionaries, a lot of the Western Sanskrit dictionaries, they translate the word dasa as a slave. Monier Williams or Apte. Das means slave. We don't want to be slaves. Anything else? Yes, sure. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go! The controller and the control. Practical.